Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Panel, Preparing for Sale, What Lab Owners Need to Know to Increase Value and Avoid Purchase Price Reductions. The presenters are Jim Billington, CEO, Versant Diagnostics, Grapevine, Texas, Gary Huff, President, Take Charge LLC, Hampstead, North Carolina, Kevin Hunter, CEO, Collaborate, Tampa, Florida, and Elizabeth Sullivan, ESQ, Chair, National Healthcare Practice, McDonald Hopkins, Cleveland, Ohio.
All right. Well, I guess we'll go ahead and get started and keep time. So as Crystal said, my name is Liz Sullivan. I'm going to be chairing this panel. Our panel discussion is building on the last panel discussion. So this is preparing for sale, what lab owners need to know to increase value and avoid purchase price reductions. And so I have three industry veterans with me today. I'm excited to introduce them. I've got Jim Billington with me. Jim Billington is the CEO and co-founder at Versant Diagnostics, and he's had prior experience with founding companies including American Esoteric and InformDx. He's also held leadership positions within AmeriPath and LabCorp. Next to him is Gary Huff. Gary is a 35-year clinical laboratory industry veteran. He's the founder and CEO of Take Charge LLC, which is a laboratory advisory firm serving the healthcare industry. And he's served as CEO of LabCorp Diagnostics as well as Baylor Genetics. And he's currently on the board of Acumen Consulting and Lighthouse Labs. And then to Gary's left is Kevin Hunter, and he leads Collaborate, one of the nation's leading laboratory consultancies. He's got nearly 40 years of experience in this space, including in operation improvement efforts at some of the nation's largest health systems and academic medical centers. His firm specializes in large-scale hospital laboratory process improvement initiatives, outreach sales transactions, and management service agreement negotiations and integrations. And he's led a number of recent laboratory mergers and has been a key advisor in that space. And because he's been in the space for a while, he has some notable press. So he has recently been portrayed in the Hulu series Bad Blood as the industry expert that saw through Elizabeth Holmes' charade and advised the Walgreens, advised against Walgreens investment that was profiled in John Cario's investigative journalism for the Wall Street Journal in his book. So thank you all for joining us today. We're glad to have you. Just to talk a little bit about how we're going to do the panel, we were trying to decide what would make the most sense. And given sort of the breadth of experience, we thought it might be nice to have everyone share a little bit of insight and some history. So what we're going to do is we've kind of got three prompts that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about considerations for those that are going to market soon or desire to go to market immediately or in the short term. Then we're going to talk a little bit about those who are considering a sale in the future. And I think you saw some of that discussion in the last panel as far as being prepared and how to be prepared at all times for a sale. And then we're going to talk about the nuts and bolts of getting your house in order if, in fact, you have some time to prepare for that sale and hopefully maximize it. So with that, I'm going to start with you, Jim. So if a lab or path owner is interested in going to market or selling in the short term, what kind of advice would you have for them? Where would you start?
Thanks, Liz. First, I didn't realize until now that Kevin was a bit of a celebrity, so can I get a selfie when we're done here just to, you know. The advice I would have begins with advisors. Make sure you surround yourself with good advisors, and the first of those would be you make sure you hire a good law firm. Now, what's a good law firm? It may not be the biggest. It may not be the most expensive, but it's somebody who's experienced and has the lawyer you're working with has a lot of experience you know, selling a business just like yours. Lawyers kill deals rather frequently. Don't try to save money on the cheapest lawyer. Don't use somebody who've used for family law matters or some other thing. Make sure you get an expert. Also, the most expensive isn't always the best. My company, we use McDonald Hopkins and Bass Berry Sims. Kind of, they specialize in these kind of smaller to mid-market style transactions, and they get deals done very easily. And to me, you know, I don't know if everybody, you know, necessarily think of this intuitively, but when we're buying a pathology group, or in the past when I would buy clinical labs or whatever, the better the representation that the seller had, we were happy with. We wanted them to have good advisors because it made the deal go more smoothly. I would say also make sure that you know, your third-party agents are all on board and understand what's going on. I'm talking about like your billing company, you know, maybe if you have somebody to manage your back office for you, because they can also slow down and kill a deal, and they are so essential to the due diligence process. You heard a lot of talk about fit in the last discussion. I would you know, definitely echo that and make sure that there is a good philosophical fit to where you want to be in the next 5 and 10 years as well as your partners. And there are differences. You know, there may be commonalities, but there are distinct differences that you want to go ahead and identify. I would say, you know, nothing is perfect. And so get out in front of bad news. Lay it out there initially, because probably we're going to find it anyway. And if we find it and it's somewhere, you know, further down the process, it's going to make resolving that issue all the more difficult. And then, you know, finally, I would say, during the process, always run your business as business as usual. I think there may be a temptation, an altruistic temptation, to maybe say, well, I'm not gonna fill these open positions because they may want to do it or whatever. But you've got to run your business as though the deal doesn't or isn't going to go through, so that you're not compromised if, you know, the unforeseen happens.
Thanks, Jim. I thought those were good tips. I was a little bit crestfallen when you said attorneys kill deals, but try really hard not to do that.
Well, no, that's why we use you all. I mean, seriously, you guys are fantastic.
Well, you were kind. I was not looking for the plug, but thank you. So would you, Kevin or Gary, do you have anything to add to that? I mean, I certainly, for me as an attorney, the idea of bad news, getting out in front of bad news, certainly resonates. Yeah. You know, it's something you want to frame up.
Absolutely. And I think there are, in particular, a lot of labs, and it's human nature to say, well, I don't want to mention that, or they may think badly of me. And I advise a lot of clients that if you know something is out there where you've had to have a clawback and you've made an error in the business, own up to it, because this business is not perfect. And you get to a due diligence table, and I can tell you for a fact, being with LabCorp and knowing those guys as well as others in the industry, they're as sharp as they come, and they will find it. And so, you know, one of the things that you really just need to be transparent and lay it out on the table so you can deal with it. You know, there are several owners that I've worked with in the past, and they have a tendency to say, well, I don't know if I should mention that. If you are doubting whether or not you should mention it or not, mention it, because you want to resolve it and overcome it now. So I would definitely say yes.
Yeah. Liz, the only things I would add to that would be, you know, the deals go through the ups and downs anyway, right? So we've all heard the story that deals die 1,000 times before they get done. And so I, too, am with these guys that I think you got to – anything that's out there, it's going to come out in diligence anyway, so you might as well just share it. The other thing I would add, and I know it's a plug for several of the people in this room, but I can't tell you the value that an advisor can bring to you guys as you go through this process. And at the end of the day, the advisor doesn't really cost you any money. I can tell you 9 times out of 10, they're going to help you get the best deal. They're going to help you find the best fit. And it really is the direction you should go. And so.
Yeah. If I could add on that as well, and I'm not, you know, trying to promote business because I'm busy enough. The fact that you just said that is so true. the lab transaction space has changed in the past year dramatically. And the panel up here earlier said it best. They're no longer looking to buy volume. You have to have value beyond volume. And they can be picky. There is a lot out there. And I think, you know, everything is relative. And when you have an advisor that truly understands the internal workings of a commercial laboratory, of a health system, on the buyer and seller side, they can be invaluable to position you to not only exit with a great valuation and multiple, but also to exit more rapidly because you overcome those issues.
Yeah. I mean, I would just echo everything that you guys are saying. I think these are great observations. Certainly from our perspective, I will say, as the attorney, the transparency, the idea of finding the issues and raising them is so critical to a transaction. But I also think it's very important that your advisors, and when we're saying advisors, that's accountants, that's consultants, that's not just attorneys. Framing those issues, so getting in front of them means, okay, getting your arms around them, not just like I have this gnawing fear that there's something going wrong somewhere. And then it's being able to frame it for the buyer. So I don't know how you would react to that, Jim, but I think it's important, I mean, for the advisors to be able to tell the story, or really the seller to be able to tell the story of what has happened, what's the solution, what's the fix, and the fact that it's not going to disrupt anything. So I don't know if anybody's had experience navigating something like that, and how, if you could share anything with the audience about how you sort of got around it and how you got comfortable with it. But I think whether it's from the sell side or the buy side, that would be a great thing to share.
No, things come up, you know, in a high percentage of the deals where something comes up and, you know, it's not an issue with which you want to contend, and you got to kind of wrestle with it for a little while to figure out, is this a deal killer or not, or is it something we can live with? It happens with some regularity. And so, again, it begins with candor about what's the issue, because, again, there's, you know, bad news doesn't get better with age, and so it kind of helps on that front. And then, again, that's where having good advisors helps in a couple of ways. First off, they can act as a buffer between the buyer and the seller. And for the seller, it can be very, very emotional. And for the buyer, it can too, but not as emotional because it's not so much your baby yet. And so acting as a buffer and to explain, you know, sort of in a calm, dispassionate way, here's why they have to do this, here's what's going on, it can really help keep things on track. And that can help get to a resolution. Once things start getting emotional, that's not usually the best environment within which to make decisions and so forth. And it can get testy. And then also, if you have experienced advisors, I think they can do a better job of laying out for somebody what could this mean in the future, as opposed to somebody who really hadn't been there before and hadn't dealt with companies in our space.
That's a good point. I will say, I mean, certainly when we're working with other professionals on transactions, I mean, being able to pull together the knowledge and saying like, okay, you know, we've been through this before. Here's what it means. Here's the timeline for resolution. Here's maybe if there's an expense to it or there's not an expense to it. Being able to lay that out makes a big difference to get through it quickly, because it's not, I mean, that's not the priority in the transaction, right? That's just something you have to navigate around. So, all right. Any final comments? Okay, great. All right. Well, so we talked about what to do if you are looking to sell in the short term or the near term, which is, you know, kind of getting your advisor stable in line so you're ready to go to market. But what about if you have more time? What if you are planning, you know, out 12 months or, you know, as Dr. Robert said in the last panel, just being prepared for sale, not necessarily looking to go to market, but being prepared for sale. What can you do to kind of maximize your leverage in those sorts of circumstances? Gary, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to go back to what the other panel talked about of how transactions are changing. And really think back to how, you know, it's no longer where you can put a for sale sign up and you have three, four, or five parties interested in buying you. So now you need to figure out, it's more turned around to the point to where you as a lab, whether it be a health system lab or a clinical testing lab, have to find the right buyer for you. And that takes time. And I would say, you know, what I usually do is I look at, I call it the OR principle. And there's really two things in a lab transaction that you really want to focus on. And first of all, our number one, opportunity. And, you know, the team here today talked about that. What are the opportunities in your business, the value beyond the volume? And it could be relationships where you have a relationship with a health system that they don't have and they want in that health system. And the best way to get there would be, that could be an acquisition. So that's value to them. It may be new testing. It may be, you know, an IT product or tool or reports that's different. And so there's more value to be had there and to identify that. And I think the other thing is your client base. And I think this really aligns with what Corey was talking about earlier, and that is not all good revenue is good, you know, all revenue is good revenue, right? And so, you know, you want to position your organization to identify profitable revenue, profitable clients, the kind of specialties in business that a buyer is going to be interested in having. And is there a opportunity to grow in that client base? You know, going out and getting a, you know, some doctors because they send you a little bit of volume here, but they can only send you a few CBCs. You know, what is their opportunity for growth for an acquirer? And I think another thing has to do with is, you know, when you look at the business as a whole in the marketplace, is it an entree into managed care plans that they don't have? You know, I can give you an example of a transaction that I worked on a few months ago where it was not attractive on its own to the buyer, but there was a large physician and they were able to leverage a managed care player for more volume and an exclusive contract if they got a certain market. That was valuable to them. And it goes back to, we're talking about from an advisor perspective. You can go and you can get a broker and you can get a banker and they can come in, but that's the old way. If you don't have a broker and an advisor that understands the marketplace, you can't develop a strategy around how to pursue the right buyer, because Quest may have a need in that marketplace. LabCorp may have a need, and you don't know that. One example where we were able to increase the market value by $14 million because we were able to identify the things that the commercial lab wanted, and we were able to articulate that. So I think things around opportunity, being able to develop that strategy and present that is one. The R in the OR principle is risk. Number one on my agenda when I look at a lab is, what does the compliance look like? How are you adhering to HIPAA and the regulations, and are your in-office phlebotomists and collectors buttoned up? Do you have the audits in place? Is your billing, are you billing it the right way? Are you doing things the right way? What's your reputation in the marketplace? You may do something in a gray area. May have a rep out there doing something in the gray. Trust me, it's not worth it, because if you start getting a reputation of doing things the wrong way, these large commercials and even private equity will not, that will be in the back of their mind. And the sooner you can address those issues around risk, whether it be, there's leases, in-office phlebotomy contracts, making sure that there's an audits that go on. There's a ton of things that have to be done. And when a buyer comes to that opportunity, it goes so much smoother, because they know that you took the time to do it right. And so the risk is way lower. Here's the other thing that, and I try to get this across to a lot of clinical labs. The majority of buyers, as the other panel mentioned, were commercial and strategics. They're multi-billion dollar companies. They are not going to risk their multi-billion dollar company's reputation or their business for a small clinical laboratory. It won't happen. And so that is the first thing that you really need to focus on, getting your house in order. And when you can do that, it gives them confidence that this is a great deal. And then when you can add the opportunity component to be able to add to their business a differentiation, business growth, taking their organization even further, then you're going to be able to go to market and identify that right partner for that.
Thanks, Gary. Obviously everything that you're talking about resonates as far as compliance and getting your house in order. When we were doing some of our planning discussions, Jim, I'm going to put you on the spot. One of the things you mentioned was RCM management. And so it's interesting because I think, you know, on the compliance side, all of those things, cleaning that up, sometimes that means, you know, you have to cut out something, right, that you have been doing. And that's never an easy decision because it's part of, you know, the business and the revenue. But you had made the point that if you have more time to prepare, that, you know, taking a closer look at that might be an opportunity, and that might be a place where, you know, rather than you're taking away or feel like you're doing something to, you know, clean up the business or it's a lot of expense, maybe that's an opportunity, a little bit of a different opportunity, one that feels different. So yeah. I don't know if you could speak to that
a little bit. I think it's just good business practice, of course, to have scrutiny on, I mean, as Gary was saying, you know, to cut square corners and make sure you have a compliance program in. And there's a lot of good advisors out there that can help you put in a model compliance program for a relatively inexpensive price. I think that's just always a good business practice. Yeah. The same thing with RCM. Al Sermon's, I speak in another room right now. I've worked around and with him a lot. He does a fantastic job where you can just download, you know, your database, do some quick analytics to make sure everything looks right in ratios. And we're seeing, I think, an increasing, you know, I'm more in the pathology world, so I'm maybe speaking to, you know, that a bit more, but we're seeing a lot more activity and enforcement activity, on billing practices. And a lot of it's just kind of a big data ratio driven. And so, not only to sell your business, but also to keep yourself out of the newspapers as well. I think it's an essential thing to do.
Thanks, Jim.
Can I add to that?
Oh, absolutely.
One last thing on the compliance piece, and I'll give you a story. I try to, when I come in to advise a client, the first thing we focus on is compliance. And when they have board meetings, we start board meetings with compliance. And the reason for that is I had an owner tell me one time, I don't want to do this. It's too much minutia. And I told them, you know, compliance is not an act, one-time act. It's part of your culture. And so that has to be seen, and it has to be lived. And the only way to do that is to treat it as the priority. And so that's one thing that I would advise. So if you've got time, you need to really make sure that it's part of the fabric of the organization. If it's not, smaller laboratories tend to think that it's not as important. It is. It's probably more important for the smaller laboratories.
Thanks.
I guess the only thing I would add to that is if somebody came to me and said, hey, I'm 12 to 18 months away from going to market, mm-hmm. I think I'd want to ask them why. And is it because they think they need to get a few things in order? Because the reality is that stuff's going to come out in diligence anyway. They're going to see that you put your compliance plan in place 3 months before we did a process, right? Those types mm-hmm. of things. I'll also tell you that, you know, most transactions today take longer than, twice as long as people think they probably will. And so starting sooner than later is probably a good thing to do as well. Because like I said, you can see transactions live and die several times throughout the process. And so, it's not like you're going to fool anybody. We had a client one time that said, well, we want to wait 12 months because we got three new big clients that are going to come on and we're going to get a multiple of six on that or something like that. The reality is that's probably not going to happen either, and you're always going to have something in process. So just be honest with yourself as you walk through this process as well.
Thanks, Kevin.
I think also, Kevin, too, a lot of times that multiple of six includes the prospect that there's always something in the hopper anyway. And sometimes I think people don't realize that. And that's one of those things folks get emotional about and,
exactly.
And cause a hitch in negotiations.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing is be realistic with yourself about what your business is really worth, right?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to be told their baby's ugly, right? So.
Yeah, my mom had real trouble with that.
No, these are all really good points. Just really quickly, we're going to move into our last prompt or discussion, and then we're hoping to have some time for questions. This is just a reminder that you can submit questions in real time through the WOVA app. So if you have questions or there was something in particular that's come up that you want a little bit more information on or for us to discuss, go ahead and put that in because I'm going to try and monitor it as best I can. So, okay. All right. So Kevin, I'm gonna ask you to start off this discussion, which is a little bit of, I guess a continuation of some of the discussions we're already having. When we talk about getting our house in order in sort of more of a granular or detailed level, what are some of the things you do or how do you approach that with a client? What does that process look like?
So we're a consulting firm first and an M&A advisor second. And so most of the health systems that we work with, we've already been brought in to help them address either a situation or an opportunity or a need. And so as we go through this process, sometimes considering a transaction really just comes out organically because of the fact that their costs are three times Medicare or, you know, there's certain things in the market that are driving them to do something different, right? And so, first things first, it's really important, and again, we have a unique situation being in most health systems that we're an insider, right? And so we know what the dirty laundry is, right? We know what needs to be done. I will tell you it's super important as you guys look through something like this is to identify the sacred cows, understand the things that are deal breakers, do the best you possibly can to kind of read the tea leaves and understand the politics. And that's all part of it, right? And then again, it's helping your client be honest with themselves about what they have and where their shortcomings are, it will be really helpful. So I would say that's where I would focus my energy is be honest with yourself, start with a blank canvas, understand what you've got because no two health systems are the same. As Anil and others said, there's reasons why they want to be a part of that. You know, we've sold hospital outreach businesses to strategics, you know, one because they were competing against for-profits and those types of things, and they needed cash, and that's one motivator. We've had others that felt like they were just hamstrung and they couldn't find the talent anymore post-COVID and those types of things. And so the idea of being honest with yourself and understanding why you want to even consider a transaction in the first place is critical. And then it begins with understanding that no secrets stay secret. And so you need to understand how broad a brush are you going to paint? Who are you going to bring into this process and have them help you along? Because you don't want to get close to the closing table and there be a bunch of providers that get upset or, you know, pathology or those types of things. And so getting your house in order means a lot of things, and that is understanding who needs to be involved in the process, making sure you've got the deal team that you need to support a transaction because it's immense. We closed a transaction in November, and just to give you guys an idea of what we were dealing with, the hospital system had over 250 different instrument contracts that we had to deal with. We had 100 different leases that we had to go get fair market values on and all those types of things. And so we spent a year getting all this together. And in this case, for example, the health system didn't even have the infrastructure or the support that they needed internally. So they wound up hiring us to run project management for them as well and helped with all the legal and all the different types of things that needed to be done there. So understanding the skill sets and the people that you're going to need to have is going to be critical. and then just buckle in. We've never not gotten a deal closed. And just understand that it's a bumpy road, but it's worth it in the end. And like Anil said, I mean, the fit and the reasons for doing a deal, be honest with yourself, be honest with the buyer, and it will move forward.
Thanks, Kevin. Would you guys offer anything else? Like if you think about, okay, there's sort of like big picture, which that's really the big picture of the transaction. But are there any things that if somebody's thinking, okay, I need to get my advisors in order, but if I just kind of want to look under the hood myself and start thinking about this, is there anything you would prioritize, like from a internal diligence perspective? Like, of course, financials are critical. Billing process is critical. Payer contracts, you know, compliance. Anything else like that that you would say, these are the things that maybe you want to look at first and get your arms around internally?
Yeah, I always start with compliance. I mean, you know, there's very few things that'll scare a nail off, but if there's an OIG investigation or if there's an issue, that's open, that's going to probably be a showstopper for my thoughts.
Got it. Any thoughts?
I would also add to, and I think this is really more around health systems, understand what their mission is. What are they trying to accomplish? Because, you know, when you look at a health system, it's connected. It's all connected. And, you know, if you believe that lab truly drives, you know, healthcare, then how is that lab going to, what role is it going to play in the future? Especially if you offload that laboratory, outsource it, whatever. And so I think there's a lot more thought that needs to go around that prior to, especially for a health system, to understand it. Because selling an outreach or even outsourcing is challenging enough in a health system because one thing is for sure, it's a culture changer and a lot of people are probably not going to like it. So how do you align with helping that health system to achieve its ultimate objectives. And you have to align it with that mission because then you will have a much better outcome if you're deciding to sell the outreach or outsource the laboratory.
Thanks. Okay. Wonderful. Well, any final thoughts? I would ask for any thoughts on any of the prompts. We do have a couple questions that are pretty good questions to pose to you guys.
One thing that may or may not be interesting but just occurs to me, if I oversimplify the process of, you know, selling a lab or a pathology group, I would break it down, and this is if everything goes perfectly. I'd break it down into about three steps. Number one is the negotiation phase. And so you provide some high-level financial information to the potential seller. They analyze it, and you negotiate a non-binding letter of intent. This is the fun part of the process. And that could last a week or two. The second phase is primarily financial due diligence. Now it's transitioning from fun into tedious and, you know, not so fun. And so that, you know, involves, you know, extracts from your accounting and billing systems. And then the potential buyer analyzing that and coming back to you with just all kinds of very nuanced, detailed questions, hours on conference calls. And so prepare yourself that the last two phases aren't very fun, but just necessary, and they will end one day. And that takes, in a perfect world, let's call it 4 weeks. And then finally, the last phase, I would say, simplified, is the legal phase, where you start preparing documents, you know, purchase agreements, employment agreements. But also you have to have all the schedules to the purchase agreement. And the preparation of those schedules, again, zero fun, very tedious, trying to find that Cigna contract that you last looked at in 2011 and you can't find the file cabinet anymore, just stuff like that. And so it's, again, not fun. Prepare yourself for it, but you'll get through it. And there's also, in that phase two, what I would call micro negotiations, where you got to kind of cover some stuff that you didn't negotiate in phase one. It could be the radius of a non-compete or something like that.
And so you have these micro negotiations and you'll get through them, but sometimes people can get a little, you know, and this is where good advisors help, you know, it can get a little emotional and so forth, and try to keep the emotions calm, trust your get good advisors, and then trust your advisors, and you'll kind of get through that too. And so in total, what I just described, there probably adds up to about 10 weeks, but that's if everything goes perfectly. Typically, the things that then slow it down are the advisors and not these lawyers, but sometimes lawyers can slow it down a little bit. But also some of your other agents that you use, your billing companies and your accountants and some of those folks. And if they're too busy or whatever it might be, and we're waiting for information from them for weeks on end, that just slows it down. And so, anyway, I just thought it might be worthwhile or interesting to kind of describe what the process looks like. It's a lot of extra work. It's very tedious. But ultimately, you do get through it.
Yeah, that's actually a perfect segue to one of the questions that was asked, which is when it comes to preparing for a potential sale, obviously lab and pathology groups, their staff are stretched really thin. So is there a strategy for getting the organization prepared for due diligence without adding stress to the staff? So any recommendations along those lines? Any thoughts on outside help? Anything we'd put a finer point on from our discussions?
Yeah, well, just speaking of the one that we did recently, they didn't have the internal resources, and as I shared with you, we provided some of that. Yeah. But we also looked to their PMO office and actually brought some people along that didn't really understand lab. So we brought them under our wing and actually taught them what they needed to do. But, yes, yeah, staffing that is going to be critical. You are still going to need things from your billing department. You're still going to need things from compliance and IT and all those types of things, and that's just part of it. But yeah, it's a commitment. It's a lift. And like I said, at some point you have to decide, you know, most health systems want to keep it quiet until there's an announcement. And that's a real struggle because you have to broaden the number of people that are aware of the transaction earlier in the process than you might want to.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, I think a part of it comes down to organization. I think everybody in all of our lives, every person who's working, right, it's, you're doing the day to day. And so it's really hard to get out of it and get into this, which I think, you know, you guys have talked about. This question raises that. So being able to find somebody, you've got the deal team, but having someone who can kind of step back and project manage, I mean, for lack of a better term, having a project manager perhaps is one potential solution if you have someone that you can designate for that role, which in and of itself is maybe a heavy lift, but it's something to think about.
One of the things I've seen work well, too, is if the seller, you know, you've got a couple of key people who are going to have to be, you know, the points for diligence, is put together some type of financial incentive bonus program for those individuals.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of worth their while to, you know, to really be putting in those extra hours in you know, nights and evenings and so forth.
Right. I think that's a great point. Okay. So this question, a little bit more back to deal, the value of the deal. What impacts evaluation more from your perspective? Is it differentiation of the organization or is it financials? So I think this comes back to kind of the fit discussion that the last panel was talking about, but I don't know if you guys would have anything to add in that.
I would say it kind of goes to what Gary's talking about. I think as a good advisor, you know, when we've run a process for our clients before, we understand that market. And so, for example, you know, we got probably $20 million more for our client because we knew that one of the strategics had signed a national agreement with a payer, an exclusive agreement. And with that national agreement, there was a requirement that they needed to have 50 new patient service centers within 6 months or a year. And they were running up on the edge of that and weren't going to be able to meet that themselves. And so the fact that not only have an outreach business, but we had 35 or 40 patient service centers in this geographical area that they needed, that was the differentiator for us getting the most money for our client on that one. We've had others where they were in a different situation because, again, they had for-profits moving in, Cleveland Clinic moving in, those types of things. And so their motivation was, hey, we need money to do battle against these new health systems that are coming in. And so what I will tell you is that on the deals that we've, where we've assisted people, very rarely have we advised our clients to take the highest bid. And primarily because it's never come down to, our clients wanting the most money. It's always come down to the fit, right? It's the culture. It's, hey, these are the kind of people that we want to do business with. These are the people that we can see that show an interest in us and understand our market and want to partner with us going forward. And so I would tell you that every deal is unique, and understanding those levers and each one of your unique market opportunities is where you need to focus. And then really go to market with your hand on your heart and say, who do I want to dance with for the next 20 years?
Yeah, I would agree with all of that, Kevin said. I think the other thing is too, you know, when I talked about the market's changed and you could just put it out for sale and have a broker take you and sell it, those days are over, in my opinion. You probably could, if there's a significant differentiation. But when you look at, for example, and I'll give you an instant example. We had a client that got an offer from a laboratory, and the offer was significantly low. I mean, they actually got three offers, and they were low. And when you have people inside that understand what that business will look like under their umbrella, there's a difference. And one of the things that we did is we looked at, we said, what does that business look like under this acquirer's umbrella? And there was a significant amount of synergies that could have been had that they were not valuing. And so there was a lot of money left on the table that traditionally you'll take to market, and you have no idea what that's going to look like, because we knew what the infrastructure was for the proposed acquirer. We knew that they had the IT, they had the couriers in the area, they had the patient service centers, and all they had to do was fold that in. And so there was significant value to be had. And so it's not always around either financial or anything else. It's very relative. And that's why you truly need to understand each individual market. And there's also something else that is not been, that hasn't been taken into consideration, is in that geography, because that particular geography may be very important to an acquirer. It may not be at the corporate level, because they may not understand it. But there's typically senior executives that have a geography, a division or a region that you fit in. And they may have a different strategy, and it may be more valuable to them. And so to know those people and to be able to position something and connect with them, not just with the buyer's corporate person, is critical as well.
Thanks. Okay, well, I'm looking at our time, and we're just at 3 o'clock, a little bit over, which was our break time. So I just want to thank you all again for offering your experience and your perspectives. And, yeah, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good job, Liz. Thanks.
Thanks, James. And the last thing I'll say is I'm going to invite Crystal Contini back up here. She's going to moderate our next panel. And this panel is Current Market for Hospital Outreach Transactions, Sales and Management Service Arrangements. So certainly we'd love to have folks stick around. Thanks.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.